What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink. We engage you, the listener, and interact on a different topic each week. We've got loads of good tunes, lovely music, and lots of analysis to keep you going.
And interviews from experts or you young people telling us what you think about our daily topic.
That's always the best part of the show, Jackson, to hear what the listeners have to say. There's always lots of juicy comments and lots of different perspectives. Absolutely,
so stay tuned. Each year, millions of Africans move from the villages to live in the city. Even though there are many other reasons for such migrations, rural-urban migration has long been associated with economic development and growth. People say that they travel from villages to live in the city to seek for jobs and enjoy other benefits related to living in the city. Now, what are some of the effects of this mass exodus from the countryside? One, they say, given that our society is mainly agrarian, fewer hands that are left in the villages to grow the nation's food. The other aspect to this type of migration is that analysts view Africa's urban unemployment and growing crime rates as a result of the overflowing urban populations. Many agree that such a situation is not sustainable. But is African urbanization only influenced by the economy? Are there other reasons for the mass flow to the cities? And what are the long-term effects of this type of rural urban migration? Let's talk Upfront on The Voice of America.
My name is Maintu Modzi. I live in Blanta, Malawi. Basically, people go into town to look for opportunities in terms of work, business, so on and so forth. So many people are moving from the rural villages into the urban centers just to try their luck in life. Urbanization has affected a lot of things because those people who plan the towns did plan at a specific number of people. And then the issues of housing are currently a problem. For instance, in a commercial city of Blanta, not many people are living in good houses just because not many good houses are there. And so the very few houses that are there are going at higher rates.
I'm Pastor Zidana, Blanta, Malawi. I'll say that the impact that it has on the urban areas in town is that towns are becoming overpopulated by day. You'll find that in most of the towns, for example, in Blanta, the population in Blanta now should be more than 3 million.
In fact, at all costs, it should not be encouraged, because once we encourage the urban migration, it means we are also limiting the survival of those who are living in towns, because there will be a scramble for water, electricity, and even space. And as a result, environment will be also affected, because people will have nowhere to live, and also nothing to eat.
Upfront show, presented by Jackson and Nadia. Well, it's Blessed Barack tuning into the Upfront show. Well informative for the youths, you know. Rastafari.
Welcome to Upfront on The Voice of America, and thank you for joining us today. We're talking about rural-urban migration and its effects on African societies. Now, we know that on the economic front, people are attracted to the cities because they're known to be places where money, services, wealth, and better employment opportunities are centralized. Businesses which generate jobs are usually located in the big urban hubs.
Nadia, it's easy to see why someone living on a farm in the village might wish to take their chance moving to the city and trying to make enough money to send back home to their struggling families. But does moving to the city necessarily mean a good life? And are our cities ready or equipped for this amount of population growth? Angelo Izama is a human security analyst, reporter. He's been following and studying the Ugandan situation, specifically Kampala, the capital city.
Our long-term national security challenge is rapid and unchecked urbanization.
In Uganda?
Yes.
Okay.
So there's a huge mass that will outstrip the ability of the Ugandan government to provide a normal livelihood, basically guarantee that they live in an environment that is decent, that they have houses, jobs.
To give a little bit of perspective to our listeners who probably don't understand the situation in Uganda, I personally grew up in Kampala, and I left in the mid-90s. I remember going back in the mid-2000s, almost after a decade, and the city was crowded. Cars everywhere. Mm. It seemed like an urban planning fiasco. Why is there this constant flow of people from the villages to the cities? What are they seeking for in the cities that they don't have in the villages? And how is the government reacting to that?
Well, the economy is growing. Ugandans no longer see themselves as trapped in the village. Remember, we have one of the largest youth bulges in the 21st century. Over 50% of the population is under the age of 25. And if you look at it, this government is not outfitted technically to meet these challenges. Uganda's population is growing at a rate unseen around the world. There are similar statistics for other countries, but you have got a high fertility rate for over 15 years, of about 6 children per woman. And you said, why are people leaving the villages? But you see, the villages are not places of hope and renewal. In northern Uganda was a 25-year war. Half the population
fighting Konyi.
Yeah, the Lord's Resistance Army. Yeah, half the population was displaced. When the war ended, many of them did not know what it was like to live in the village.
Because
a new generation was born in the camps.
They were in these camps, the internally displaced camps. Okay.
So Gulu, for instance, which was another center of these riots, has almost 3-4 times the population it had, you know, before the camps were closed.
And some people say for the longest time it was like a ghost town.
Yes,
you know?
It's now a rising metropolis. It sits at the border with Sudan. It is a center of trade. The only night commuters, there are business people now, including the large problem of any growing city, which is, you know, low-rate crime, prostitution, you know, drugs and that kind of thing. So that reality there, you can see it in very many regions. In Karamoja, you've seen all those Karamojong cattle rustlers. Their own society has been under siege by a different military expedition there to disarm cattle rustlers. But it has pushed a net number of people from Karamoja and surrounding regions into nearby towns, but most people just come to Kampala. In the 90s, population of Kampala was, you know, about 800,000. It's now 4 million during the day. Basic infrastructure, including for sewage, I spoke to the people who are in charge and they said only 8% of the 3.5 million residents in the surrounding areas are connected to a sewer line. Over the years, we've had to relocate our pumping stations from Tank Hill to way inside the lake, Lake Victoria, where we get our water, exactly because pollution via the Nachivubo Channel, the main channel that drains the city, which acts really as a if you'd like, a flush toilet for these residents, has polluted the water. Now you worry about effluents from all the pollution that is coming from the city, and this is a growing problem. So Kampala is an urban planning challenge, and it's also an urban plan in urban nightmare for the government, because our long-term view, my view, since these riots began from the Mabera time, is that we are seeing an emerging urban underclass, and because the government is playing an old game.
So those who moved from the villages coming to the cities to seek for the better life are disillusioned.
Not only that, they are trapped in slums. So if you look at the geography of the city, it is surrounded by about 3 or 4 large slums, really. They used to be fairly navigable settlements. If you work in the city as a mechanic or as a fruit seller or whatever, you have to buy food. And when you're living hand to mouth and you don't have savings, you look for something that can generate quick money. And the crime.
That's crime.
Exactly. All the young men then go just to the upper east side, if you'd like. And we have seen attacks on individuals, vicious attacks. They take cell phones, laptops. They rob you for your money. The last, I haven't looked at the present crime report, but if you aggregate the types of crimes that are being committed, almost 60% of all crime is committed in an urban setting, a peri-urban setting.
That was Angelo Izama, human security analyst from Uganda. We'll be right back. Now, Nadia, let me bring you here into the discussion. You know, when we talk about rural urban migration, it's not that a group of people move from the villages into the city and cut off all life or all connections to their people that they left behind. We shouldn't overlook the fact that the rural urban immigrants or migrants continue to maintain strong ties with their families in the rural areas.
Absolutely, Jackson. And an interesting survey which was released by Statistics South Africa in 2006 revealed a pattern of movement from villages to small towns, which might not be what we thought it was all the time. The study from Stats SA seems to show that migration to the smaller towns appears to be more permanent, whereas in many cases, the other form of migration we see is more temporary, where people move both from rural to urban and urban back to rural. So it's a circular cycle that sociologists and social scientists are noting now. And another reason for that is, like you mentioned, the strong ties that stay and the strong bonds that stay in place when either the younger ones in the family move out to the bigger cities to earn more money or to study or whatever the case may be. It's commonly found that they actually do return a few years later, a little bit later in life, and settle back in the communities that they'd actually moved out from. And that's exactly what our young people do when they move to the city, right, Jackson? They hustle really hard to make it happen and to have a good life, to have a good go at it. Hopefully many can hustle and go to school because that would improve chances at a good life. This is the Voice of America with Jackson Vungani, who's in Washington, D.C., and I'm Nadia Sami, coming at you from Cape Town, South Africa. Let's hear some more of your opinions now.
So what should be done in order maybe to prevent people from villages trekking into towns, making sure that those who are in the villages have similar access to the facilities which they think can be found in towns alone?
I'm back in the Senfuka. People move from village to the cities because of the environment. Rural areas lack facilities which people, most of the people, want to use, like rural areas. They have no electricity, there is no water, there is no health services, there are no schools, transport is a problem. So these facilities are mainly found in urban areas. Mostly the youth now are looking at entertainment. These facilities are not available. There are no employment in rural areas. So people go to look urban centers to look for employment, others to look for education facilities and medical facilities. The only way what can counteract rural urban migration is the government to develop rural areas.
One of the major reasons is, like in cities, you find those good schools. So that one can force people to move from villages to city. Another reason is, like, in town, there are more chances of getting good jobs. There are more chances of getting connection through those people who have good educations. You can maybe befriend them and then you get a better place.
Solomon is a graduate student here in the U.S. He went to school at the University of Ghana. So Solomon says that one of the ways to address the issue of rural urban migration is to redirect our educational priorities and make people understand that it's much better. There are much better opportunities in the villages, in the rural areas, than there are, most cases, than there are in the city.
People have the perception and, of course, the misconception that once you live in the city, everything is better. You have electricity, you have constant flow of water, you have better quality of education, there are good access roads, and there are jobs for people who want to look for jobs and all that. So once you get that perception, once we go to visit villages and people see you well-dressed, they want to get that kind of lifestyle.
So they come. And they imagine that if you move to the city, then you have going to access, and you're going to, you know, have access to all these different opportunities and you look like a city kid.
Yeah.
And is that a problem, though?
It is a bigger problem.
Why is it a problem?
I think that there are bigger opportunities in the village, but because of the perception and the idea of a white-collar job, people want to come to the city.
So you're saying there are bigger opportunities in the villages?
I think so. I strongly do so.
So why is there no problem with urban rural migration, people in the city moving to the villages?
Because the people have not seen the necessity and the importance of what they have.
So they have not opened their eyes to not their opportunities in the rural areas.
And more so because they are not well educated to see the need and the essence of what they have. Because for me, I think that problems are equivalent to money. I mean, there's someone who, one book I read, the author said that money is a concomitant of a problem solved. Mm. And so the more problems they have in the village, it tells you that the opportunities there to develop and solve so those problems to get money.
Right. So there are better opportunities in the places where there's disadvantage.
Sure.
Because if you're a young graduate in seeking for solutions to the problems there, then there's an opportunity for you to make money, to make a living.
Yes,
a
the giants, living. The young giants who are making living in Africa are doing so because they go to those areas, try to solve problems, go into agriculture, which most of us have neglected. We want to sit in the office.
And that's the conversation we've had here on the show.
Sure. And I think that is the big mega problem. And that's what we have to look at. And it's a lot of courses that causes this, because now our educational system is equipping us to live the lifestyle of like people who are like elitist and aristocratic, have to dress some way. But I think
Western lifestyle,
we need to put on a tie and dress in this hot, sunny afternoon, sweating profusely, thinking that we are living the Western style. So those things come to the fore. Once we repackage the essence of doing those basic things and solving the problems of our societies, people will see the need to do those things and to invest in those areas.
But is it a problem that should be solved on an educational level? Stressing the need to solve issues in rural areas.
Sure, perfectly. I think that I'm a strong advocate for anything in terms of education. And I think that basically our focus should be on stressing the need of addressing these things rather than telling your child that I want you to be a doctor, which is a good thing. I'm not saying it's bad, or I want you to go to the law school, I want you to become an entrepreneur. I think that we can package these things very well such that people can go back to where they are from and then solve the problems from where?
From the best.
Because one, the people know the problems best. And where I am from, even though I'm schooling, trying to get some education here, I know the problems best in my society. So once you put me there, I'm going to be the like Lionel Messi or the Ronaldinho on the field.
Okay. So then the question, then I guess the education should teach you to be a problem solver, not somebody who seeks shortcut.
Perfect.
Moving to the city is a way to seek a shortcut to,
yes, which is not even
to what
real.
Is perceived as a successful life.
Yes. Because you come to the city and then the conditions are so harsh. You don't know anyone there. The cost of living is very high and you have to struggle. And people, some of them end up doing things that you are not ready to do. That comes from misplaced priorities in our educational sector, because we are looking at it from a different angle. And our focus is to get people to go to school and to sit in the offices.
To do these fancy jobs.
And then when they come with
Work for the government.
It's a different thing altogether. So you can tell the dynamics. We are living in a different location, trying to fit into an environment that does not suit where we are born from.
Like, and this so it, idea that has been perpetuated in our minds.
It is a difficult thing, and there has to be a total overhaul of our educational system, a rebranding, and a shift in paradigms from our thought. Then we can realize that we have something that is important, and we have a different perspective. It is important to learn from the West, but then we need to bring it back home and make it our own and make it better. That would help.
On Upfront, we're still talking about rural urban migration, and Salim Solomon says there's a level of disillusionment takes place, so that happens among the millions that migrate to the cities
around the continent each year because it's not really what they expected. The opportunities or the prosperity they were seeking for is not necessarily available, is not accessible, as easily accessible as they were made to think.
So 60 to 70% of the African population is under the age of 25. So there's a huge youth bulge. And if you think about, like, you know, urban migration as of independence, let's say 1960s, there's only like one city with over 1 million population. That was South Africa, Johannesburg.
Okay.
But now, as of 2010, if you look at the speed in which urban migration has increased,
right,
over 33 cities have
across the continent.
Yeah. And so you see, like,
they have over a million inhabitants.
Yeah, population.
Right.
And we're talking about urban places.
Right.
So this is the urban migration that we're talking about.
So what is it that pulls or attracts people to move to the cities, to the towns?
Yeah. And the reason why the young generation who grow up using mobile phones, who grow up with the expectation of getting better education, better businesses, they have high expectation when they move to cities. And so
they have expectation for what, though?
For growth, for, you know, they have a Western...
For prosperity.
Exactly.
You're saying most young people migrate from rural areas to the city because they have a Western understanding of what prosperity means or what success means. And that means, you know, modern amenities like cell phone, cars, fridges, electricity and things of that nature, which are not necessarily bad things to aspire to, right?
Yeah, but who's to say that they don't grow up using those, whether you're in rural places or urban places? I mean,
well,
look at everywhere.
Access is different, though.
What I'm trying to reflect on is the level of tolerance for the young people is very little now. Because they already are exposed to.
Interesting.
The access is already there.
They exposed through what means?
Information through mobiles or, you know,
technology.
Just even reading. Yeah.
So reading up on things like that. So information technology, one of the after effects of information technology is that it exposes young people to information, but not necessarily the right kind of information.
No, I would say that it has a positive effect because they have little tolerance for corruption. They have little... I'm talking
okay,
about
that's
the
a whole
youth.
Different idea.
It is.
Yeah.
It is a good, good related subject because the thing is, when people move to urban places and they are part of like the political structure, the governance, everything that comes with urban places, that once they're exposed to information and higher standard of education, that they demand more, which is a good thing. But it doesn't mean that it always works. And that's where the high expectation part, the negative part of the high expectation comes in. If you look at how when young people with little to nothing move to urban places, they go to places like shanty towns or even like, you know, slums in Kibera. Like look at places in Kenya.
Right.
You can mention so many places that are not up to par when it comes to having the high expectation, meeting the high expectations they already had before they moved there. So they live in slums, and so they tend to fall for negative aspects in life, you know, crime and things like that.
In the villages, you may realize that there are no services, and people may wish to move from the village to come to towns where they can get access to services, for example, like health services, educational services, recreational services, which are not in the villages. The absence of services may force people to leave their villages and come to town. It affects the society because it may lead to congestion. It may lead to a high rate in crimes like theft, because most of these people who run from the villages, they come to town thinking that they are going to get jobs. But unfortunately, when they get to towns, they end up failing to get jobs, which may cause them to look for all possible ways of survival.
It's just because of the long perspective that people have got over urban places.
Not only that, we need to engage into rural growth centers, which already the government is implementing. These rural growth centers means the rural areas will be developed, and then people will be able to get jobs in their rural areas. If we push the internet into the rural areas, not many people who moved into town, they'll be able to have access to things like internet, things like electricity. We have to make sure that as the towns are developing, the rural areas have also to develop so that not many people should move out of the rural areas into the urban centers.
So many effects of rural-urban migration, but in the face of the general poverty of the African states that so many of our brothers and sisters find themselves in across the continent, most large and expanding cities simply cannot cope with the management problems associated with the garbage collection, disposal of human waste, the provision of clean water, regulation of traffic, and just the orderly development of roads, lighting, and other services when the population continues to grow month by month, year by year.
Also, experts say that rural-urban migration kind of steals or robs the rural areas of their young and versatile population, the young people who would till the gardens and farm and all that. Masai David in Nairobi, Kenya, recently moved from the village back to the city.
In terms of infrastructure in the village, you are a bit exposed to less developed infrastructure in terms of transport, telecommunications, and all that compared to the village where it's a bit more developed. Contrary, you'll always find that in the villages, you're always exposed to much more greener aspects of life compared to the town where there's always smoke pollution here and there, traffic, noise.
If you didn't have to move because of your job, where would you prefer to live, in the city or the village?
It always depends on what stage of life you are in.
I know when I talked to you right after university a couple of years ago, you told me you would rather prefer to work in the rural area. When did that change?
You see, at the end of the day, you always, as a balanced person, you always want to have a blend of the two worlds. And considering that for me, actually, since I finished all the, primary school, I left the villages. So actually, I had a very big disconnect with the people in rural area. And I think for someone who's interested in the area of development studies, people interested in leadership, it's always good, again, to have to touch base, actually, to be able to connect.
Now, Kenya is one of the countries that has a very big population that is moving to the cities or to the towns. People do have different expectations, I guess, for their moving from the villages, and they also have different reasons why they move. But what are some of the misconceptions about living in the city that when you talk to people who moved from their villages when they moved to the city, what are some of the biggest misconceptions they find or they have?
I think basically just all about searching for the opportunity. People always have an assumption that by the time they move to the city, their life will always be better. But again, you find to the contrary, because the villagers are possibly living better lives, but most of the time you find them coming to the city where they headed towards the slums, so which actually their living standards are much normally worse off compared to the guys living in the rural areas. But there is always have an assumption that should I move myself to the city, my proximity opportunities are relatively higher, because I'll be able to maybe be able to access better education, be able to access better job opportunities. But again, coming to the city, if you're not fully prepared, in terms you do not have fully qualification to be able to acquire a stable and relatively well-paying jobs, or possibly be able to start a very active, very robust business that can be able to help you to shape, to position yourself in place economic and well, can be a big challenge. But the greatest misconception, guys, when they're moving from the rural villages to the urban areas, is always opportunity. You always think the other side is always greener. But at the time they move to town, they always discover that's not normally the case.
Thank you very much for listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I would like to thank my co-host Nadia Sam in Johannesburg, South Africa. We would also like to thank all our listeners who contributed to the show this time around. And if you have any questions or comments or want to contribute to the show in future, remember to send us an email at upfront@voanews.com. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, my handle is @UpfrontAfrica. Let's connect again next week, right here, same time. On behalf of my colleague Nadia Sami, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye.